Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Celia Kutcher, your host, also known as the Food Healer, and I'm really, really excited about today's episode. I've got Danielle Fladke in the office with me, and she was really affected by the whole refugee deal that's going on right now, and she actually went to Lesbos, Greece, to see really what was going on with the situation with the Syrian refugees. And while she was there, she found out a lot about refugees with pets, and so that's what we're going to be talking about today. It's a really intense topic. I'm really, really excited to talk about this. It's something that I don't think, I mean, it never crossed my mind. I don't know how many people really thought about this, but I'm really, really excited to have Danielle here with me. Danielle, hey, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited you're here, and I'm so excited to be speaking to you and not some organization, because you were actually there, so like you actually know what's going on.
Sure.
And I think that that's huge. So can we start with actually how you got there and all of that, like to like from the beginning, like what lured you to Lesbos?
The story broke my heart, and the plight of refugees fleeing war and persecution and violence in Syria. And I wanted to help. I thought about donating, but I actually wanted to do more. I kind of wanted to go be there and help any way I could with my hands. Mm-hmm. So I ended up flying to Lesbos, Greece, and spending most of November there working in various refugee camps on the island.
I'm amazed that they would let an American just show up and do this.
Well, actually, the lion's share of aid that's being provided throughout even the EU and mm-hmm. the refugee crisis is being provided by, it's being organized and provided by independent, decentralized volunteers like myself, wow. Sort of self-organizing using social media.
Wow. So when you got there, like how many volunteers were there? Like were you a big pool?
You know, it's funny. Just before I left, I had seen someone trying to take a head count and guessing at how many volunteers were there on the island, and someone had chimed in, and I'm not sure if this is accurate, but someone said, I think there are 52 of us.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, 53 pretty soon. Yeah.
And so when you were there, I mean, I can't even imagine what you saw, what you experienced and all of that. Did you see a lot of animals?
I saw a lot of animals on the island locally, that there are strays, of mm-hmm. course, that are really well taken care of in an outdoor environment.
That's
and
cool.
Integrated, I would say. And I did see that there are a lot more volunteers than 52. I think there are people all over the island, so it's really hard to get statistics on anything.
Yeah.
Anything from refugees landing on boats to how many people are on the ground helping.
Totally.
And also, who's counting all of the amazing, warm, and generous Greek locals that live on that island that are every day
That's a good point.
Doing things to help refugees?
And is Lesbos a big island? I've never been.
It took about, we'll say, I don't know the actual size of it. I think it's around 78,000, the population.
Wow, okay.
And it took about an hour and a half on a slow bus ride to go from one of the southern points to the northern point.
Okay.
So it's pretty big,
yeah.
And refugees are landing all along the coast, and you can never tell when, and you never know where.
So they're just showing up as the boats show up, basically, like night,
absolutely.
Day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely after dark is a better time for them to leave from the Turkish coast, because mm-hmm. all of this is illegal, and
God.
It's smugglers bringing them over.
God.
Smugglers are bringing them over at gunpoint. They've paid, you know, all of their money to get places on this boat. And part of that, when we talk about someone who's willing to take this dangerous journey, they mm-hmm. take their children, or in the case of someone who really loves their dog,
yeah.
and the dog's part of the family, they're paying to get a spot to take the dog also on this boat. These rubber dinghies that are probably meant for 20 people, they shove 40 to 50
really?
On them. And oftentimes, they'll get them into the water and then take a refugee and put them in charge of the motor and
oh
then
God.
Just jump off the boat.
Oh my
and
God.
So there are a lot of people have been lost at sea, because It's not the longest crossing. I think it's maybe 4 miles at the nearest point between Turkey and the coast of Lesbos.
Okay.
But it's the sea. It's the Aegean Sea.
It's a rough sea, man.
Yes.
I've gotten so seasick on that sea. Like, I'm not even lying. I'm not trying to make light of it, but like, I get seasick everywhere, but that sea almost killed me. I mean, I can't imagine doing it in a dinghy. I was on one of the big Greek ferries, you know, going to Mykonos and to one of the other ones. Wow. I mean, I can't even imagine, like, an overcrowded dinghy. I mean, it's just, you know, it's so, these kind of things that we're so fortunate here in this country that we don't even seeing it on the news or that kind of thing, I think we become so numb to all this information that I don't really think, in many cases, it really fully sinks in.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think, like, the experience that you had, to be able to talk to you about this is so much more powerful to me than, like, while turning on the news and seeing all of this, because you actually experienced it and you know what's going on, where, you know, with the news, sometimes it's so biased, we really don't know what's happening.
Yeah, it's really tricky, but it's even difficult, you know, to get good information. So bias is one thing, but also just having reliable information when you're talking about multiple languages. So you land on this island, everyone's trying to kind of use English as a touchstone, but not all of the Greeks are fluent in English.
Yeah.
The people that are coming from France to volunteer have maybe decent English.
Yeah.
There are people from Germany. There are people from all over the world.
Wow.
And then you have refugees landing and they speak maybe Arabic or Farsi or... they don't even understand English. So just to try to get accurate information or to convey anything in that kind of an environment is hugely challenging.
And, I mean, I can't imagine how difficult it is to get out of Syria, but then to get out with, like, an animal, I'm assuming it makes it that much more difficult.
Sure. I'm assuming, too, you know, not really knowing firsthand that myself. But... I know that some are able to secure spaces on the smugglers' crafts to be able to take their animals, and they have already had to say goodbye to everything else in their world that they knew. So I can understand. I mean, I don't know about you, but in my emergency evacuation plan in my head, it's always grabbing the dog and grabbing the cat.
Oh, yeah,
and
it's always the cats.
You know, you're always...
I haven't even gotten that far. I'm like, grab the cats! I didn't think about, like, food.
Oh, yeah, you gotta bring food. I always think about the dog food and the cat food, and I always forget about the people food. So. Well, they'll be happy.
Totally. And so then, before the show, we were talking about the fact that there really is no real protocol in terms of, like, vetting and things like this because of the situation that's going on. So you were mentioning, like, 3 different areas and, like, the rules that they were involved in those.
Oh, that's when we were talking about pets.
Yeah.
Protocols for pets across borders.
Yes.
So I guess let's try and use a best case example.
Okay.
I and you say we want to go live in Greece for a year and we want to take our animals. So we would have to, I think you need at least 10 days ahead of time to get, like, blood tests.
Yeah.
And they're... I don't think we would have to do quarantine. Again, from my research, but there usually are quarantine times.
There can be, absolutely.
Yeah, there can be.
Absolutely.
And the 3 tiers that I was talking about are, from my research, what I've seen is there, as far as if there will be quarantine or what the protocols are for animals crossing borders, there are 3 tiers. There's the no rabies countries.
Mm-hmm.
There are the controlled incidence of rabies countries.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the high incidence of rabies countries, and Syria is one of those that's in the class 3.
Mm.
So you could get a pet passport, and that pet passport would allow you to take the animal through in the Schengen area, where you can travel freely in the EU.
Okay.
So if you had that kind of forethought, if you weren't afraid, I guess if you weren't being politically persecuted and you didn't have to fear giving out any information about your plans, maybe you could go ahead and get a pet passport.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, too.
Right. Or if you didn't leave in the middle of the night because, you know, your living room had just exploded.
Yeah.
If you had some time to plan.
Yeah. So it's wow. I mean,
yeah, I know.
It's just, it's amazing because it's, you know, my family fled Austria during the Nazis, and also fled the Japanese from the Philippines at the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the stories, trying to get these stories out of people, it's just, you know, it was very bad. And I don't blame anyone for not wanting to relive all these moments, you know, but you just don't even think of something like a shell coming into your living room when you're sound asleep and having to run and get out of there at that moment, you know, and having the forethought to grab everything. And then I saw an article this morning, actually, and sadly, I wish I paid more attention. It was talking about refugees crossing a border, and basically, I don't remember which border it is, but they're taking all their possessions and all their valuables. And so they're crossing in, and like what little they've brought with them, they're handing over, you know, and little things that they could actually barter with and like sell or like trade for food or what have you.
Yes.
You know, so they're surely showing up, and it's like, yep, and you're not going to have a thing. So, yeah, you know, it's... It's a really, really intense subject, needless to say, and it's compounding it with animals is just such an interesting thing, too, because, I mean, you know, they're family members.
They are. It wasn't until I had actually seen the Reunite Theus campaign on Facebook through my volunteer community that I had even considered it. Definitely, we had had strays that we had adopted in the refugee camps, like White Dog. White Dog stole a sandwich, and we were cheering for White Dog getting that sandwich. So they were definitely, like, we adopted them in these places, and I saw that those animals would bring joy to the refugees and the children there. But, yeah, when I saw the specifically the Reunite Thea story, I realized... you know, people are trying to, in some cases, bring like these beloved fur family members with them. And when you think about that crazy landing on that overcrowded dinghy in the middle of the night with your cat, and you don't speak any English, and what that scene looks like, just so people get separated. And it's hard enough to reunite them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this ran off from the boat, and that family was from, I think, Kabul, right? Looking at my notes. And volunteers tried to help the family locate the cat for about a week, but the family had to move on, and it took a week until the cat resurfaced.
Oh, you're kidding.
But people knew the story, and they recognized the cat, and so there's a whole campaign now. So it's funny. Like, it just so happens that a woman, Amy, I'm looking for her name, Amy Shrouds. She was in Oklahoma City at the, Okay. This is how I know of her story. I actually talked to these folks a little bit today.
It's awesome.
Just to get some like back information for this story. That would be more than what we would see. Say we go to the website or something. So Amy had been doing communications for the Humane Society. I don't want to get that wrong. We're going to double check that.
That's fine.
And she went to Lesbos to volunteer, and so Theus resurfaced while she was there. And so she, the Humane Society Director of Communications, and so she recognizes how important these relationships are, and these people have left with nothing, but they brought this creature that they love so much, this like family member that they've done everything, they paid for a spot, and then just to like slip from their grasp. And so she says, I'm going to do something to reunite them.
Wow.
And so it was a friend of hers that I spoke with today, Amy Nin, who is Michelle Nin. She's actually in Oklahoma City, she's doing media for the Reunite Theus campaign.
Nice.
And so they have all of these pictures of Theus, and they're printing out the flyers, and everything's translated in Arabic and Farsi also, they're getting distributed to the refugee camps in the countries that they believed the family was trying to travel to.
So they don't even really know where the family is.
They don't know where the family is. God. So Amy took Theus to Berlin and found a foster family there who's got Theus for the next year.
Unreal.
And if they don't find the family in a year, then they'll just adopt Theus. But, there are pictures of him looking very well taken care of.
Good.
But they're going to great lengths to reunite this love.
And that, that blows my mind. I mean, what I want to do right now, actually, is I want to take a commercial break now, and then I want to talk about some of these people with their pets, because, I mean, the stories, one is more incredible than the next. Yeah. So let's take a break. It's going to be about a minute and a half. I'm talking to Danielle Hladke all about refugees and their pets.
Hello out there. It's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers, artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
And we are back. We are talking about refugee pets with Danielle Hladke, who actually went to Lesbos to see what was going on and help out with the refugee situation from Syria. Okay, so what kind of animals are people bringing over with them?
From what I've seen, it's cats or dogs.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so no livestock, because that would be really intense.
Not that I've seen.
That would be, can you imagine? It's like, I need my cow.
It's like, yes. I think they do know that a pet passport will be provided for a cat or a dog.
Yeah.
And also, I think a ferret.
That's cool.
I'm looking, but yeah, I think they're really just limited to those. So
that's cool. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the instances that you sent me, because I think they're really fascinating. I mean, there was a 17-year-old Syrian refugee who actually walked 300 miles with his dog and carried it to Europe.
Yes.
Because he'd said that he'd loved it so much it was part of his family. And I mean, this boy is not alone. Right. You know, there's no way possible this kid is alone. And I love the fact that they got his story. I'm assuming he's safe at this point. So I'm hoping that's the case. Can you tell us about Diaz the cat?
The story of Diaz really is, you know, at this point, it's really up to us to use social media to try to tell that story in every language that we can.
Seriously.
To reach these countries in Northern Europe that we think this family was eventually going to settle in.
Wow.
And, you know, even if their family back home or someone somewhere that knows them sees the story, this is exactly how this can be resolved. This is exactly how they'll be reunited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of up to us.
Mm-hmm. And it is. I mean, we were talking about social media before, and that's really what all the refugees are using for information, aren't they?
It is. I mean, it's really challenging. Social media, I've seen, is being used to not only organize and execute aid through the refugee crisis, but also to keep refugees informed. So a lot of times they're leaving with what they can carry, and that's a smartphone. Part of that, it's really important that they stay connected because the borders are always changing and closing.
Oh my God.
And there's all kinds of information to be had. And so volunteers have put together a social media network specifically for refugees to keep them informed of what's ahead, to tell them the best ways to travel, to tell them when to stop and wait.
Wow.
To do what they can to just try to keep them safe.
God, it's amazing. It's really amazing because, I mean, you know, it's things like Twitter and all that and Facebook and, you know, things that people – it's just amazing that we have this opportunity and these tools that are actually able to be used to help these people. Yeah. I mean, this whole thing, like I've said 5,000 times, it just completely fascinates me. It really does because, you know, fortunately I haven't had to deal with an experience like this. And so it's just so foreign to me. But the amount of respect I have for you for actually doing this is like a thousandfold. I mean, it's really amazing that you did this. So do you know if any countries are, like, banning animals coming in?
I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I don't. I do know it's easier that for an animal to get a passport than a human right now.
Really?
A pet passport. Yeah.
Wow. And then, I mean, Diaz the cat was basically, was that the cat that really brought light to this subject?
For me, yes. And I think, you know, probably Amy and Michelle being in communications,
mm-hmm.
and that just that this campaign that they put together for awareness, you know, well, look, it's worked.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully if we can continue to share that story too, we can have some of the happy endings that other people have had.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Dia's the Cat has a Twitter page, so you can find them at DIASTHECAT. It's Dia's the Cat. And it's fascinating. I was on that earlier, too. So there's a ton of information if you're really interested about this topic. And I think that Dia's is, in a sense, kind of one of the spokescats of this whole thing, because it's a kind of, you know, it's that one of those situations that as soon as you see a face and a name, it kind of makes it all more real. So I think that the more animals that we know that are out there, as well as their families, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously. I don't want to push aside the human aspect of this at all, but we're an animal show, so that's what we're talking about, you
of
know?
Course.
But I don't
caring
want to be like, you
caring
know. Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, one of the articles that you sent me, which, I mean, blew my mind, of the human kindness that's going on right now, you know, Swede flew to Sicily to rescue a Syrian cat and bring it back with her because she was something she wanted to do and wanted to help out.
Right.
So the amount of human volunteering and effort and from all over the world, I'm blown away by this. I mean, it really, this is what gives me hope, frankly.
Yeah, it's really amazing. It's really beautiful. It was mind blowing for me to see people coming from all over the world, and using all of their skills and using like tech skills to create new technology,
wow,
develop apps, doing these things from a purely altruistic place.
That's amazing.
Was something so powerful for me, particularly in this.
And so, like, if there's anybody out there that's even, you know, toying with the idea of going over to help all the refugees, I mean, when you got to Lesbos, was it just like a nightmare, or was it like, were you able to find food and water and, you
oh
know?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Okay.
I mean, Lesbos is a beautiful island. It's a tourist island,
yeah,
too.
It is.
So, I mean, I had found an apartment through Airbnb.
Oh, no way.
So
okay.
I found an English-speaking
perfect
Airbnb
perfect
renter, got an apartment that way, and then from there, found a group that was having a meeting in the town that I was at, and branched off with them to the refugee camps. And,
so you
and
just
went
kind
to work
of like you just kind of like wandered around till you found these people.
I didn't. I mean, I went to sleep that night,
mm-hmm,
my first night that I arrived, and I went right to where I knew this meeting was going to be.
Okay.
I think a better protocol for it at this point is, I mean, if you're on Facebook and you go to the info, oh boy, gosh, do I remember it? It's fit info point, information point for volunteers, Lesbos. I can't believe I'm going to have to look it up. That's crazy. I don't know this. I'll look it at my phone while
yeah,
we're talking.
Go for it.
But
that's fine.
If you wanted to go and you wanted to help, you could do it. It's better. They actually are really well organized now. I say them, us,
yeah,
all of us who are just doing this. No one's being paid. And,
This is what blows my mind, too, is that it's like it's all volunteer, that it's not some organization that's in charge of this.
Yeah,
like,
it's not. It's not. There are like local Greeks have responded by creating small NGOs just because of this,
wow,
crisis over the past few years. They've found themselves, you know, it's Melinda, who had the Captain's Table restaurant on the northern coast in Malavos,
mm-hmm,
on Lesbos. Refugees have been landing there for years, you know, not en masse like
right,
they
right
have been for the last year, but she had found herself, you know, in this position where she was basically like getting donations and,
oh, wow,
and taking over a storage space, and then just finally was, you know, like, well, we're the Starfish Foundation now. We're just going to become an NGO, which,
wow,
they did as of October 2015, just as a response to their humanity in this.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's information point for Lesbos volunteers. And it's really comprehensive, and it's being built and updated daily by people like you and me.
Wow.
And it has everything you would want to know. Like, can I go, even if I'm not a doctor, even,
yeah,
if I don't speak Arabic? And the answer is yes. You can go there. I spent many days cooking,
mm-hmm,
and making meals and then taking them and distributing them in refugee camps.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I really, it's made meal making very different for me.
I'll bet.
Ever since.
I'll bet.
But they also have short lists of emergency help that's needed at different points.
Mm-hmm.
They have places for people to put accommodations together.
Cool.
And it's just, yeah. You
so
can
it's
really
more
organize
organized than you think it is.
It's so much more organized than you think it is.
That's great.
Yes.
That's really, really good. And so then in terms of, I mean, I don't know if you saw any when you were there. I don't, you know, if there are vets that are going out, because if there are enough animals to make this difference or not.
I'm not sure that there are vets going out there or there are enough animals to make it seem like there's a need. So again, it could just be my lack of knowledge in that area. But I think a local vet was the vet that looked after and chipped Theus.
Oh,
I keep
good.
Saying Deus because it's spelled D-I-A-S.
Yeah, it's
D-I-A-S,
oh, it's spelled
it's Theus.
Oh, okay.
Which is like Zeus.
Sorry.
That's okay. it's a lot. We've got a lot of words to deal with here. I don't think there's so much of a response on the ground as far as vets go, but this kind of response, this kind of, you know, caring and realizing that it might not seem like much to one person that someone's lost their cat, that they've, you know, gone through such great lengths to bring with them on this journey, to just go to great lengths to try to make that reunion that would mean so much to those refugees that have had to leave everything else behind. Let them just have that love back in their life again. That's something, you know, you don't have to be on the ground anywhere along the Balkan route or the refugee route. You could do that from home. You
can
do that by circulating this information, because in the end, social media is what is helping a lot of people, keeping a lot of people alive and reuniting people and pets.
I mean, I totally understand it, too, for, you know, a situation like this. So there's a lot of people out there that are like, screw the pets, leave them. Like, I get it. I completely understand that angle as well. But for the people losing, I mean, you've just lost everything, you know, and this is for many, 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 many people, as we all know, their pets are their family members. So in order to do that is the amount of bravery required and the amount of guts and the amount of risk that they're putting themselves on to smuggle an animal with them.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, honestly, if a smuggler wants to be a jerk, it's like, nope, not bringing the pet on. You know, those kind of things. So, like, going to these incredible lengths to save a life of something that they really care about. And, I mean, you know, yeah, it's an animal. And we are, too. So, like, you know, you can go, well, it's just a cat. But, I mean, for many, many people, their cat is way more than just a cat or just a dog.
They have.
Especially with this upbringing. Like, everything has been torn out from you. And then it's like this one little live thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're leaving your home, you're leaving your possessions, you're leaving your family. You know, you may have had family members get killed. And it's like, little kitten shows up, and you're like, oh, God, now what? You know, and so you can see people grasping for that desperation. Like, same in World War II, where people that came, that made the crossing, like, people, like, I know someone who's passed now, but he was in World War II, and he had a stuffed teddy bear. Mm-hmm. And he was, I don't remember how he got it, it's a good story, and he kept it with him in the foxhole. And so, like, this bear became, like, his, like, good luck charm and, like, his right arm, basically. And it was never discussed, and he became quite high-powered in corporate America. And so then one day they asked the wife to do an interview. He couldn't make it for the interview, so he's like, just talk about the war or whatever. So she brought up the bear, and the whole story became about this bear. And then it was like, oh, my God! And so they had to actually, like, desperately beg to not have it run, because it's like, no, yeah, very successful man, was crazy in the war and had a teddy bear, you know. So it's like, but even things like that, like a little tiny talisman, becomes so important that you know, if it becomes a sentient being, then it's just even more intense, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, in that, some people of course are forced to leave them behind anyway, and there are, you know, I know of at least one organization that works directly with Syrian animal rights activists.
That's awesome.
So the activists are saving, and I know at least cats, and it's Peace 4, the number 4, Paws. And I will let you say how you, because we know they're in Northern Europe.
Yeah. It's foreign, so all you foreign-speaking people, all I speak is Spanish, so don't kill me, okay? I'm going to have to spell this for you guys. If it's German, I'm going to pretend it's Friedenfürpfoten.org. However, what it actually is, it's FriedenFürpfoten.org. If that's not German, I'm really sorry. I apologize. I have no idea. It could be pretty much anything. But it's a pretty amazing website, and it's a pretty amazing organization, so...
Yeah, if you go to... Well, it's the Facebook. You've got to go to the Facebook page or contact that info. I don't know what's up at the website. I think it's, you know, I think it's down right now.
Yeah.
But if you go to their Facebook page and find the right one, because I think there's also one in New Jersey called Peace for Paul.
There is, and it's not the one in New Jersey. This is the foreign one.
If you go there, you'll see some of the cats that are up for adoption. So they're helping rehome these animals that have been rescued by Syrian animal rights activists.
Nice. And so, then where else can people find out info on this?
On which part of this?
On, like, the whole mess of, like, the cats. Or, like, do you have any websites that you really
internet.
Like? Yeah.
No, actually. Like everything in this whole situation, it's up to you. It's, like, what you can find and what you can put together.
Okay.
If you wanted to help support some of the costs for, you know, the flights for Theus and the foster family, they have a GoFundMe for Theus, which I think we're going to put up on the Heritage site after this.
Totally.
And then the info at Pause for Peace address that you gave them.
The one that I just killed.
But I would look on Facebook for them at the Pause for Peace, and it's not the... Again, not the one in New Jersey.
And if you miss the spelling, you can listen to the podcast and get it back. So
yeah, exactly.
It's not gone forever. That's good news.
We did pretty good with that.
I think we did. I mean, it could be so much worse. You know what I mean? It's you can really kill a foreign language if you want to. You know? So I just did it with my Spanish accent, so I think it's probably wrong. But that being said, is there anything else that you want to say?
Well, I would just say, you know, it's up to you. If there are other ways that you want to help, you can. You just have to find that way and do it.
Right.
You know? No one's got this. It's up to us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's a really wonderful point. And I wanted, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is one of the most important shows I think I've done so far. And I'm really, really honored to have you come in here and tell us what is really going on and not just like what the news is reporting, because, you know, it's night and day.
Thank you. I am so honored to be able to speak to you on behalf of the Theus's family, Michelle, Amy, everyone fighting to make that reunion happen. My adopted Syrian refugee friends who I need to be the voice for here.
Totally.
And for all of the hardworking, big-hearted volunteers everywhere that are putting blood, sweat, and tears into making a better life for people everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely, I mean, all you guys that are doing this and all you guys that are helping out, thank you. That's about all I can say. If you do want to help out, get online, start searching and seeing what you can find. If you would like, we can also put some information on the Facebook page for Animal Instinct. So if you didn't know, there is an Animal Instinct Facebook page, so we can throw some info on there. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I'd love to talk about this much, much more, but then there's also a part of me that's just so in shock with this that I think I'm just going to be real quiet tonight and just thinking about all this and thinking about how fortunate we are that we have homes and that this isn't going on here. So that being said, Danielle, thank you again.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate it. I will be back next week with a lighter topic, a brand new episode. Thank you guys for listening and take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.